Good morning, everyone. This is Brandon with the Iowa Healthcare Association, joined by our partners with Amerigroup Iowa for our monthly managed care calls, sponsored by Right Dose, a Guardian pharmacy. Right Dose has been a sponsor throughout all of 2022 for our MCO calls, and so I appreciate the partnership that we have with Right Dose for the remainder of the year for our calls here. So we'll get us started by looking at some of the informational letters again that are important to members, at least over the last month or so. Info letter 2325 is the COVID relief rate add-on payments. This is the $300 per day for those individuals in nursing facilities that were in isolation for COVID-19 and active COVID-19 infection. This $300 per day add-on was ended on June 30th. And so that notice came out mid-June, notifying providers of the end of that program. Info letter 2351 is the third application period for the HCBS ARPA recruitment and retention grants. As many of our waiver providers know, there's been rounds one and two of the recruitment and retention grants that they were able to apply for. Based off of the number of employees that you have and the number of openings you have, there would have been a sum of funds, grant dollars given to providers to aid in retaining and recruiting new staff members if you needed to. So a great opportunity. Third application period opened it up to a few more waiver providers to be able to access those grant dollars. So IL-2351 is that one. IL-2345, expiration of federal and state waivers for nursing facility nursing aid training programs. This is the temporary nurse aid program. Many individuals in Iowa, actually about 5,000 individuals in Iowa, took the TNA course, the approved TNA course, to be able to provide CNA services throughout the duration of the public health emergency. In June, it was determined that those temporary nurse aides would need to begin the process of getting on the registry, and providers were given notice that by, I want to say, October 6th, all TNAs would need to be on the registry as certified nurses aides. So this notice is explaining that transition process of needing to start that and move those individuals into active CNAs. Another one that I want to mention for our waiver providers is the waiver and HAB rate changes that are going into effect on 7/1. As the legislative session ended, there was not an appropriation for waiver providers to increase their rates. But as that session ended, it was determined that through the department that ARPA funds would be able to be used to increase waiver provider rates and caps by 4.25% effective July 1st. And so that notice came out on July 1st. Through IL-2354, notifying everyone of that increase. And so I know the managed care organizations are actively working to institute and implement those rates into their systems at this time for all waiver providers, the 4.25% increase. How that works is if you had an active, if you're an active waiver provider and already had a rate for your services on June 30th, it would be a 4.25% increase to that rate on July 1st. If you are a new waiver provider and have not provided waiver services in the past and did not have a rate assigned to you, it is possible that you would be able to use the maximum rate that is included in administrative code Chapter 441.79 is where those waiver rate codes and waiver rates are located at. And so if you are new and utilizing the max rate, then it would be a 4.25% increase to that max rate is what will be listed in Iowa code going forward. They are in the process of making those changes, the department is, into the Iowa code. And so as that goes into effect, like I said, we know that the MCOs are doing their best to get those rates implemented as soon as they can. With that, that is the end of my spiel on current informational letters that wanted to review with you all. I'll pause now and turn it over to John and see if he has any updates from the Amerigroup side.
So I'm just trying to confirm a couple of things offline to get make sure that we've got our whole team on board. I do know that we have somebody from our the Medicare side of the house on this call. So if there are questions about MeriVantage and health plan things, we've got Dina Rucker on board to respond. And I'm just seeing if Shunda Young is out there, come off mute and let us know if you're there.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Awesome. So that is your provider solutions, SME on home health with us. So I think, and then we've got Donna and Don Hobson. I know that we've got some other people from provider solutions out there. So our team has assembled. I don't really have announcements that are anything other than what Brandon has already noted. You know, when in the global scheme of things, we're still operating in a public health emergency mode and all of the state plan amendment policies largely remain in place. And I know there are active conversations going on between IME and the MCOs and some other stakeholders on how the quote unquote unwind of PPE policies will go in a phased in fashion at some point in time when the public health emergency is ended. So, but no one anticipates that happening in this calendar year. So that is sort of our continued mode. We've moved into a new fiscal year and we'll be getting instructions from IME accordingly with regard to any of the adjustments on any of the policy changes that impact Medicaid and long-term services and supports in particular. And rates specifically, and we'll move in concert with that those new pieces of guidance. So, you know, with that, I would just say, you know, let's dive into the pre-submitted questions and move through the call.
Sounds good. Thanks, John. So our first pre-submitted question was in regards to code G0300, which is LPN services for a home health agency. And the question is talking about how there was a recent change in the Amerigroup system in May that started denying these visits. And just the question of has any work been done, or has there been any work to help correct that issue?
Donna, I wasn't aware of the issue. I'm not sure if that had been escalated to the provider experience team, but I've been doing some research this morning on trying to figure out why that's happening?
Yeah, when talking with the provider, they'd indicated that, you know, they'd be able to, they were able to submit that G0300 LPN code in the past, and it was paying fine. Now it is denying, I think for the reason saying that there is not an authorization for those visits. And so I think it's unclear what change happened in May that forced those specific services to no longer process as they had prior to May.
So is this a provider, a specific provider, Brandon? Is this somebody that that we can connect up with our provider solutions to really have some claims level analysis?
Yes, it is, and I can provide that. I would, I guess, ask if there's any other home health members on the call that if you do, if you're also experiencing it, it may be indicated in the chat, but I do see in the chat that someone is explaining this a little bit further. And it's basically saying G0299 and G0300 have been able to be used interchangeably, basically. You'd send an authorization for the RN code, which is the 0399. But when you're actually looking at the billing for that service, you're billing the same number. And I can't remember what that number is. So if someone has that, I want to say it's like 0551 or something to that effect. You're billing the same thing, whether or not the service is authorized for the RN or the LPN. When you're billing, the rev code 0551 is used interchangeably for both of those services. And so when it's denying for an auth, I guess it doesn't make sense on the provider side that they're both billing to the same rev code.
Yeah, Julie? It is rev code 0551. And I know I ran the call last month and we had multiple people. This is not isolated. And I think you guys were supposed to go back and check to see what was going on with that.
Brandon, this is Dawn Thompson, provider experience. I did see the question and I was not aware that of anything that was actually, I don't know if there was anything in May that happened that actually maybe presented this since it's an authorization. I know historically we had an issue previously where the authorizations were actually being including the G0300. I don't know if that's what's happening again, but I would just ask that each of the providers that are experiencing this reach out directly to your provider experience manager, and then we can, I don't have any update or anything, but if we could just get to the claims that are actually, receiving this denial. They are interchangeable, but I'm not sure that they don't need to be. Donna, do you, or I guess it might just be Jolie, if we know that they need to actually be on the authorization. I don't think they did in the past, but I think that's what we did to kind of solve the problem.
Brandon, further in the chat, it talks about Heather has sent her rep, Cherie, the information from their group. And Cherie said it shouldn't have been an issue and that it was an obvious error, yet they're still having to dispute those claims.
Yeah, and I think the struggle, and I think someone maybe mentioned this earlier, is that, it's the same rev code. I think we would prefer to send an RN if we have one for those visits, but we don't always know. And so that's why the ability or the flexibility in the authorization process has helped help providers to be able to bill properly and not be denied for lack of authorization for the G0300 code. And that may be what you were saying, Dawn.
Yeah, and I think that, Heather, you're indicating that you felt like it began with the availability update is what I saw in the chat too. So that's kind of the road that I would have to go down to see if there's some connection.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll go to the next one. It's regarding cost containment letters, identifying claims that need to go back because of EOB issues. I know we've had conversations, at least on the last several months worth of calls regarding cost containment letters that have been sent to providers. And I mean, understanding cost containment is a necessary process and a required process by the department to ensure appropriateness in paid claims. I think some frustration obviously falls where it seems like the cost containment letters that we're receiving are for situations that we've been hashing out and discussing since 2016 regarding EOBs, especially for our home health members. Processes changing, going from the ZX or the XB, not homebound, in box 80, going to the Z76.89 as a secondary diagnosis. And then, you know, fighting to get those claims paid and then having to go through cost containment, which is also trying to take those back now, create some struggles for providers. And so just wanting to check, as it seems like cost containment letters picked up here within the last couple months or last several months, our providers are receiving several of them requesting tens to hundreds of claims to be paid back, which are not, at least in, we can show that they shouldn't be, I suppose. So any thoughts from the Amerigroup team on work being done on the cost containment side?
So cost containment is a continuous process. And as you pointed out, a requirement in program integrity is required by the state. You know, as I mentioned in our email exchange last week, we need examples. Provider specifics truly matter in this case, in stuff like this, because it could be so many things. I know that you have your speculation about what it is, but in response to today's questions, you know, it could be a potential system issue, or it could be a variety of different lines of cost containment. And without examples, we really can't reply with any specifics in a setting like this. So, you know, the collection of examples of what you're seeing will allow our provider solutions reps to actually research and see what's going on, and do whatever internal continued follow-up, you know, we can do, you know, in cost containment. And, you know, it's not handled within the health plan, so we need to go, you know, outside of the health plan to our enterprise to research these items. And without having the example letters, we're operating blind.
Yeah, I understand. I definitely understand that, John, and I appreciate the comments. I think just in general, I know this isn't necessarily what you're looking for because you obviously need letters. So obviously, you know, providers on the call, if you're receiving letters that you feel are inappropriately trying to recoup funds back, we can compile those and send them to John and the team there. But just in general, you know, when we're looking at these claims and we're verifying the legitimacy of the claims that have been submitted, it is the vast majority of them that are properly paid. And just we don't have an understanding of how they are selecting some of these claims that they feel need to be taken back. It there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason, and it's difficult to have to fight three or four times to get the money that you're owed properly the first time. And that's just a struggle and a frustration, I suppose, on the provider's behalf of continuing to have to do that, having to create spreadsheets then for claims that should have been paid right the first time to try to get them fixed. It does seem like just recently, within the last several months, I've been hearing more and more from providers about the struggles of improper denials of payment and proper recoupments of payments from the Amerigroup side that I'm not hearing from other plans or other insurance companies. And so it's becoming more difficult to operate as a provider when you are having to fight for every single dollar that's paid to you. So I don't know that I necessarily expect a response from that, but that's just the sentiment, I suppose, that I'm feeling in talking with members daily about the impacts of having to fight for everything does. So.
Hey, this is Patty Buckland, and I'm a provider services rep, same as Don and Cherie and some of the others that are on the call. After we talked about this a lot last month, Brandon, I know I worked with the providers that I support, and we were able to get some of those things validated or disputed, whichever side of that went down. We did notice that in many of the items that were in a cost containment project with a letter going out, there was some information gaps. So I know with the providers that I support, that's what I shared with them. We were able to get things corrected and move on. But it did go both sides. And I can pop into the chat the cost containment phone number, their fax number, and they even have an email address that if providers want to reach out just to validate the projects or whatever, maybe that will support.
Patty, I appreciate that. And that would be great if you could put that contact info in there. And I also understand that, you know, we're not perfect in submitting claims. There are instances where things get missed on accident, and we'll own up to that in those situations where we forgot to put a code on there that was supposed to be there, or maybe it was on there, but then our software dropped it in the transmission to Amerigroup. And so there's definitely instances where I understand that the claim submission would be an error on our part for sure. But obviously there are obviously instances where, like you mentioned, information gaps that could be fixed and corrected that would maybe reduce the number of letters or reduce the number of claims being recouped and maybe improve the accuracy in which claims are being looked at. So that way we're actually looking at the number, like what needs to go back, rather than having to continuously battle to keep properly paid and billed funds. So. But I appreciate your comment, Patty. Thank you.
Yeah, and Patty just dropped some useful information into chat.
Awesome. Third question submitted ahead of time is I got this from one member, so I guess I can't validate whether or not this is happening across the board or not. And so if this is, let me know. Providers receiving denials for not having an authorization for home health aid just recently. And then obviously, we know when working with Amerigroup, you all graciously removed the authorization requirement for home health aid back in, I want to say like March of 18 or something like that. But just curious, I guess, if there's a known issue or this is known by Amerigroup at a greater level than just the provider that I heard it from or not.
This is the first that I've heard that this is an issue, and I know Donna is capable of researching that if a provider is able to provide an example. Donna, if you want to elaborate on that anymore, you open up the mic.
I can always try. No promises, right. But I can try and research and determine what the issue is and try and escalate it from there.
Hi, this is Dawn. pops in the provider experience. We actually do know that it's a known issue that has occurred. Brandon, this is one that actually did occur with the update in our system in May, mid-May, somewhere around there, that this was, you know, actually not computing that the no authorization was required for this particular GO156 and the rev code. It is a known issue, and we are actually in the process of, you know, working further in production to correct the issue. But in the meantime, providers do not need to do anything at this point. We are actually sweeping for this denial code and this denial for this particular service code for home health. And we should be seeing those reprocessing. I would give it through the end of the month to see if you start seeing some reprocessing of those claims that were for that denial.
Awesome. Thank you, Dawn. Dawn, in your opinion, I know you mentioned that, I guess for anyone, but you mentioned that providers don't necessarily need to do anything at this time because Amerigroup's going to try to sweep those. Is there a time frame where you think providers should then start to appeal? Like, is it after, you know, 90 days, like just to make sure that you're retaining your repeal rights? Or what are your thoughts on that?
We actually have somewhat of a contractual time frame. Once we discover something that is a denial issue, you know, with that, we really are trying to, you know, maybe not get the fix done, but actually do some, you know, reprocessing of claims within 30 to 45 days. But, you know, it's something that's fairly recent. Enough. I've only heard from a few providers myself regarding this. And it's been within, for me, it's been within the last month since I came, you know, back from leave. So I don't know when it actually started, but I think I'm equating it to some update in our system that obviously started, you know, back in May. And I would just really encourage the individual providers to reach out to their experience manager to be able to see those. We actually are getting some spreadsheets of the sweeps, you know, that have been done, let's say for April, May, some of those. And once we have those and we are actually able to look at the spreadsheet for the project that's being, you know, conducted and see what claims are on there, what provider it's impacting. So reach out to your provider experience manager if you'd like to be, you know, included in getting some information from that. And it'll be an ongoing changing, you know, different spreadsheet as we continue to go forward with that until we actually have the production fixed.
Okay. And then last follow-up, I suppose, on this one would be, obviously, if you're getting a denial on for that service for not having an authorization, then you haven't been paid. And so you would still be within the 180 timely filing limit. Is the thought that if you have that denial and you're getting close to that timely filing limit, that you should be appealing that if you haven't seen it already reprocessed?
And I would say, I want to make the clarification that the dispute process is 120 days to start, okay. And then 30 after that first level of dispute when you move on to the second level. But I would encourage you, if you're getting close to that 120 days, let's say 100 days, for example, you haven't seen any reprocessing, then I would be reaching out to your provider experience manager, you know, maybe again, and just getting an update, see if we can see what claims have reprocessed or in the reprocessing queue, and then what are, you know, what's not, you know, with that. But yeah, you do not want to take the risk of, you know, not having the opportunity to dispute it, but we do give you, you know, 20 days to dispute the claim from the first EOB denial.
Perfect. All right, so there you go. If you are having that issue specifically, I suppose, the home health aid authorization issue, known issue, Amerigroup is on it, working on it, trying to sweep them and reprocess them. But if you are getting close to the end of your claim dispute timeline, which is 120 days from the EOB denial. Make sure that you do dispute to or check in and dispute to make sure that you can retain those dispute rights. Thanks, Don. We'll go to the chat now. We have several questions in there. And I guess I do have some others that I've gathered prior to this anyways, but one question. I know I talked earlier about the waiver rates. Any thoughts or updates on if those have been implemented or where we're at in the process of putting the waiver rate increases into the system for Amerigroup?
And I want to clarify, you're speaking of the July 1st, 4.25% for the HCBS waiver rates?
Yes, you got it.
Okay, that actually configuration has been completed for all the providers. And so we have received notification. I'm sorry, this is Don Hobson again, I just wanted to say. So those claims that were billed high enough, we're actually going to reprocess those, but if you did not, for some reason, if you're billing specific to the actual rate that it was, you will need to submit corrected claims with the increase of the 4.25% added to that billed charge.
Okay. And I think, you know, for most providers, they wouldn't be billing until later on, but the exception would be for CareBridge. If claims are being submitted by CareBridge on a daily basis, as they're verifying that the visit was completed, that's where we don't have any control in the rate that CareBridge is using to submit. And so we end up having to appeal any claim that is paid at the incorrect rate up until, I guess, CareBridge gets the updated rate. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Don, or.
Brandon, what I can share with you is that that's a very valid point, because CareBridge has received the information and of the increase of the 4.25% for those service codes that are actually going through CareBridge and updating that rate for those. So I know that they already have those, and I'm not exactly sure with the CareBridge submissions if what you're saying, you know, sounds like the experience is that they actually have to dispute those. We are working to get all of those updated in the CareBridge. I know they have the information. I don't know offhand if they've all been updated at this point, but I would say at this point, reach out to your provider experience, rep, just to be able to be sure that we don't need you to do anything different with the CareBridge submissions.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, Don. I'm looking at my list here before going into the chat, because I did have some that came in a little bit later, but some of these are repeats, I suppose. But I know John mentioned at the top of the call that you do have someone from AmeriVantage on the call, so we appreciate her joining us. And so we do have a couple questions. I know one in the chat, which is probably a more general question, but a good question regarding home health, is the AmeriVantage plan is treated like a Medicare Advantage plan, because it is a Medicare Advantage plan. But can you maybe help providers to understand a little bit more about AmeriVantage, especially on the home health side of things? Because I mean, it's great that you're able to join us today. Then I think I see you're unmuted, but I could not hear you. I still cannot hear you. John, can you hear her?
I can't hear her.
Dina, if maybe you're double muted on your end.
So I guess one of the questions is,
rather than having this sort of general discussion about Medicare Advantage from a descriptive standpoint, maybe we should schedule a time to give her 20 minutes. And maybe she has some collateral materials that can be circulated that we don't have at the Merit Group health plan level.
Okay. Yeah, we would welcome that conversation for sure. Because I know we've had, an uptake in users of the AmeriVantage plan here recently. And so the more information that we have, we can better understand it and better provide those services to the members who utilize that benefit. So this is not a general question on that AmeriVantage plan, but not sure if Dina is the one who needs to answer this or not, but the question of whether or not claims that had previously been submitted to AmeriGroup that in error ran through AmeriVantage, if those have been corrected or if there's a process for those being corrected.
Hi, this is Dawn again. I just wanted to clarify if we're talking about the system that you're billing Medicaid as you normally did, and it is hitting Medicare or AmeriVantage, and you're getting most likely getting a rejection for some reason, or their request for EOB, and we are running a monthly process to actually capture those rejections and get them into our system and actually get them processed on the Medicaid side. I don't know if that would be for home health, claims that obviously would be not homebound, that would not be covered under Medicare.
Yes, that's what we're talking about. Okay. They've either been rejected or denied for not having some kind of a HIPS code, I think is one of the other denials that they may have gotten. And I know that this isn't obviously just a home health thing. We do have, the following question in here is NF claims affected by being processed through AmeriVantage rather than AmeriGroup. And so I guess the hope is that all of our provider types or any claim that's inappropriately captured by the Medicare side rather than the Medicaid side are being gathered in that correction.
And if they're rejected, Brandon, and for everyone on the call, if they are being rejected for, as you mentioned, maybe possibly dispense or another reason that, Medicare requires a different type or process of billing, and they're rejecting them, all of the rejections are being, we're sweeping for, well, I don't know if sweep is the right word. We're actually converting out to get those rejections and then to send them through and process them on the Medicaid side so they actually get into AmeriGroup Medicaid claims system so that we can process them. Those are rejections. The denials, I'm not that familiar with those denials that are actually happening. Maybe it's for EOB. I think maybe that might be what could possibly be happening. I don't know that we have a, systemic issue with that, but I'm not really sure on the denial part.
Right. I think at least with the denial, we have a route to be able to appeal or dispute those denials. With the rejections, I suppose it becomes harder because you don't have an actual denial, I suppose, or payment on the claim.
Brandon, not to interrupt you, but we don't even actually have the claim in the right system. Does that make sense? We don't have it to the claim system yet because it's been. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's actually you're billing, the individual providers billing a dual enrolled individual for a Medicaid service, maybe this exact same way they were billing before, but since we've taken over AmeriAdvantage, it's getting diverted over to the Medicare side and reject. And so those particular ones we are gathering and queuing them is what we call that to get them into our system. You know, a denial, you do have a process, you know, if it's actually got into AmeriGroup Medicaid side and you have denial, I would encourage you to utilize your denial, you know, dispute process for that. If you have significant numbers of those, again, reaching out to your provider experience manager and letting them know that so that we can look into that. We may need to put actual escalation ticket in to actually have those looked at as one, you know, one group of claims for a provider that is getting denials, you know, with that. But they could, once they're in the system, they could be denying for, you know, once they're into AmeriGroup's Medicaid side, they could be denying for many different, you know, reasons. So we have to look at those claims, you know, individually.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I guess a question would be, is there anything we can do on the claim to indicate that Medicaid should be the primary so it doesn't flip to the Medicare side on accident?
I am not familiar that there is actually a process or a place to do that.
Okay.
But I will tell you this, we are working diligently to get that fixed so that they actually getting, you know, routed to the right place. You know, as we're doing that, we want to, you know, capture those rejections and try to get them, you know, and get them over to the system so we can process them.
Yeah. And I think on the home health side, you know, the indication of that Z7689, which is basically saying we don't need to bill the primary payer, could be that route on the home health side, I suppose, to show that this is a Medicaid claim. And should be routed through the Medicaid side, but yeah. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah.
This is Angie with Therapy Solutions. This is Angie with Therapy Solutions, and we have several patients that have both AmeriAdvantage and AmeriGroup. And this is my experience. It's been for months like this. I go ahead and I bill AmeriGroup, and they do deny, but I don't do a thing, and then they eventually pay through AmeriGroup.
So that could be what Dawn's maybe referencing as far as queuing them or sweeping, I suppose, for them. Does that sound right, Dawn?
Yeah, and I think I wanted to make sure I was still unmuted. Yeah, and I think that's what we're trying to, we're working on the production of trying to fix that, and I think we're getting closer. I don't think we have 100% on it yet. But I think, you know, we're definitely aware of that, and we're trying to work to make sure that they do go to the corrupt, you know, side of the house, if you want to put it that way. But yeah, we are capturing those that, you know, are denials. But again, depending on, you know, what the actual denial is, once it actually gets into the Medicaid side, it could be, you know, a difference if a claim does not get captured.
Awesome. Thanks. Also, Angie, thanks for that comment too.
Sure.
I do see a question in here regarding CDAC S5125 paying incorrectly, at least for this provider, for the last year or so. They've gone through the reconsideration process, sent in their agreements, spoken to CareBridge, reached out to their rep, and still aren't able to get a resolution to the proper rate being paid. Any suggestions for Sue on what her next step should be?
Well, and it's going back to 7-1 of 21, it looks like Sue is indicating, and so that would have been the 3.55% increase, I believe you're probably speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, that was last year's increase for HCBS services. So I would first and foremost, make sure that your claims were billed, you know, high enough for us to do reprocessing. The fact that it's back to July 1st of 2021, and you're still not getting the correct, you know, pricing that would have been including that increased rate, I would say possibly couldn't have reprocessed those in the process that we had, because that's what we were doing. Once we did, just like this year, once we did the configuration, we actually go in to reprocess those claims to make sure that we pay the additional percentage that was added. That would have been the same last year. So if that didn't happen, I'm just wondering if it's possibly billed high enough that we could do that. And then the other thing is we need to confirm that CareBridge also updated the pricing for 7/1/21 with that 3.5% like last year that they we did as well.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would maybe add to that too, Don, is making sure that, I guess, the rate that you're thinking you should be paid is the right rate. And so basically, that's kind of what I said earlier about the 4.25, but the rate that you had in place on 6/30/21 would then be multiplied or increased by 3.55%, and that should be your 7/1 rate, 7/1/21 rate in this situation. And then again, with the new increase effective 7/1/22, the rate in place on 6/30/22 would be increased by 4.25%. So just making sure, I suppose, I just wanted to state that, I guess, that you have the right rate in the system too, so.
And I will add to that, and that's great, Brandon. I will add to it. Last year, we did not get the percentage rate, configuration, the rate file from IME to do the configuration or the notification to do the configuration update as quickly as we did this year. I mean, we actually got it, within the same month this year. We did not last year. So it was probably, I want to say maybe August or September before we actually got the configuration completed, which means that, if you had billed and not got, if you were billing in July of 2021 and had not included the additional rate increase, we wouldn't capture those when we did reprocessing. But if you had and we didn't, then definitely, Sue, I'm not sure who you're with, but if you could actually just reach out to your provider experience manager with, we can get you a template so you can give us some ideas of the claims that are impacted on that.
Awesome. Thanks, Dawn. Flipping through the chat here, looks like we have several people asking about MerVantage yet again. So if, like John mentioned, if we need to set something up or have a specific call to MerVantage and how to bill, I guess, I know you can't tell us how to bill, but the process, if we're billing it just like we bill Medicare, and that includes every single NOA that needs to be completed, and is it exactly the same or is it not? I suppose that's what we're going to try to find out if we can. Keep reading through the chat here. I think this is a question from Jen about the letters that they're receiving and denials for EOBs for Medicare again. They're disputing them. And sounds like the disputes are being upheld or not being recognized at all. And then being told that their claims are going to be offset by, their overpayments can be offset by future claims. I know we've had a conversation about this in the past too, about, instances where we'll follow the process, the cost containment process for the letters, and not get a response at all. And so we have no idea where it's at. And then eventually get another letter saying, we're going to take the money back now. And which, as a provider, seems pretty unfair to be able to be following the process as you're supposed to, and not have those efforts recognized at all, and then just requesting the money back. So I'm not sure if that process has been improved or not. Again, I know that's a different, we'll call it side of the house again, with cost containment, but I don't know if there's any thoughts from Mayor Group on that. I do see a question in here about the timeline for takebacks. I think that timeline is 5 years, as far back as they can go currently for review of previously paid claims. That's Patricia's question. Here's another good one. I know we've talked several times about, you know, referencing or talking to your provider experience manager. And I know when looking at Amerigroup's website, and I know we've talked about this in the past, John, the process for getting a hold of those individuals, I think there used to be maps, and there aren't maps out there anymore, at least that I can find. We're submitting to a general mailbox and then being spread out is my understanding. Can you maybe talk to that again and just make sure everyone is on the same page as far as the provider experience team and how that flows within Amerigroup? And maybe I just did it.
No, you're fine. So, Brandon, this is Patty Buckland. I'm the one that put that in the chat. So, like everybody, you know, we've been dealing with some different struggles as far as staffing goes and organization and that kind of thing. So we still have our team. We're here. Our email addresses and stuff haven't changed. But to kind of fill in the gap as far as when people are out or ill or taken away for some other training or whatever, we made live on our website earlier this year, like it's a contact us feature. And if you click that, you'll get like the web. It's similar to every other business, you know, where you put in your name, your contact information, what's my question. I think we also even have like 10 and NPI affected. So, and then that goes to the first available agent that can assist you. So that way, if you keep emailing Patty Buckland and I'm out because I have COVID or something, like you're not getting assistance. So that way stuff doesn't get stuck in an email trap for an agent that may not be available to respond. So we kind of shifted away from the maps for a hot minute to kind of offer this different service model. But if you're working with an agent and you're getting response from that agent and it's going well for you, that's also okay. We just made that option available to kind of fill in that gap, if that makes sense.
Yes, it definitely does. Thank you, Patty. I know we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to try to get through some of these questions quick. Just a verification on the 4.25% increase includes, it goes to all or any HCBS waiver service, regardless of the provider type. It's just if you are providing waiver, you get the 4.25%. Is that accurate?
That is, Brandon. It is for all HCBS services. That would include your facility-based CDAC services and your individual CDACs, which, you know, we also recognize as an HCBS service.
Perfect. Thanks, Tom. This is the question of whether the NF rate letters have been received for July. They have not been submitted yet for nursing facilities. The anticipation, Janet, is that those should come out this week. I talked to the department earlier this week, and that was their intention. They had some people that were out in the approval process for those, and so they're hoping to get them out soon. Janet, I see your other comment here about reaching out to provider rep about a claims processing issue that you're having. I guess I'm not sure what should Janet do if she's having claims outstanding since December that are haven't been fixed yet.
This is Dawn. I'm unmuted, so I'll just go ahead and jump in. It's really hard for me to answer the question, you know, clearly not knowing, you know, since December, what is actually the issue? Is it a rate change? Is it some other reason that the claim is denying? You know, assuming you're following the dispute process for those claims, I don't know if you're indicating 82,000 claims or $82,000, I hope, but I would just really reach out to the provider based on the location of your facility. I think, Janet, we don't have a identified individual for all of your facilities, but I think you would be reaching out directly to them to see if you, and I hope you have at this point, since we're talking about since December, you know, it's been several months, but we would probably, you know, most likely need to get a ticket in to see what's happening with those denials.
Janet, did you want to add anything? I saw you were unmuted, so. And then we can't hear you if you are talking, Janet, just wanted to point that out. The last thing I see is from Sue and to Dawn, and I don't know if Dawn, if you can reach out to Sue or not, but she included her email in there for outreach if you could. So with that, we are through the chat questions and the previously submitted questions. So again, we're right at 12:30. So I appreciate the team from Amerigroup jumping on and walking us through a lot of this information. We really appreciate it. Also, all of our members for joining us. We appreciate you guys joining us monthly and asking the questions, and so that way we can make sure that we're working all towards the same goal of improving the ability.
Brandon, yeah. before we wrap up, just a little going back to the Medicare questions. And Dina Rucker from our MeriVantage plan was on the meeting today and was trying to speak. And she saw that she was unmuted on her end, but we still couldn't hear her. So she indicated that if you had a list of questions, to send them to her. And I dropped her email into the chat.
Awesome. We appreciate that. I guess anyone with a MeriVantage questions, that's in there. So I'll pause right now to allow for anyone who wants to take that down before I close down the call to be able to get that. But again, thanks to members, thanks to Amerigroup and the team there for joining us, and also thanks to Right Dose, a Guardian Pharmacy, for sponsoring our calls every month and all of 22. So with that, I will sign off for today, and we'll look forward to speaking with you all again next month. Thanks, everyone.